Are we living the most real life possible? I ask myself this question all the time. Most of the time, the answer is, I just don't know. Sometimes the answer is, definitely not. This is why I have this podcast. I'm Matt Bodker, and welcome to the show. Before we get started, just three small things. First, please, please leave a review where all reviews are accepted, like Apple Podcasts. It's the main way by which this podcast gets into the hands of other people. Second, please consider supporting Living the Real through a small recurring donation at patreon.com/LTR or a one-time donation through Venmo or PayPal, all in the show notes. Third and last, please visit livingthereal.com and sign up for my newsletter, where you'll get updates on future resources like upcoming blogs, YouTube channels, guest appearances, and exclusive content on my Living the Real method. Okay, on with the show. Today, I continue my conversation with Angie Long, who is a licensed marriage and family therapist in San Diego, California, and who also happens to be my sister. Today, we talk about freedom, and I think it's an important time and timely topic when we're faced with this global pandemic that seems to be stripping away our external freedoms, our ability to go outside and go to restaurants and see friends and do the normal things that give us life. Now, we can look at this in two different ways, as being a restriction of freedom, or it may be an opportunity for us to deepen our awareness of what freedom really is and what its purpose is in our own life. So join me in my conversation with Angie Long, going deeper with what freedom really is and how we can go into a different perspective and receiving a greater sense of internal freedom in our own life. And of course, we can never start a podcast or an episode or anything about freedom without first starting with a clip from Braveheart.
What will you do without freedom? Will you fight?
Fight against that?
No!
We will run! And we will live. All right? Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
Okay, so you have to start any episode on freedom from Braveheart. That's just kind of like the criteria of every single possible thing on freedom. So today's episode is on freedom. And I wanted to play this. So what did you feel when you heard this? I didn't play it for Sis. She didn't hear it beforehand. I just told her I was going to do this because it really made me feel a couple different things, especially in light of our kind of quote war that's going on. It's very, very different in how I'm on my front lines. But when you heard that, what, anything resonate with you besides it's like totally a guy flick?
Right. It's definitely, it's tempting to inspire some patriotism there for sure. And it's hard, it's easy to get pulled into that in a kind of, of course I'm going to do the brave, courageous thing.
Totally.
But it struck me that the run and live piece, sometimes, the easiest choice in the end limits your freedoms or has consequences down the road that, maybe you're not thinking about in that moment.
I totally agree. When I played this for the first time, I felt so weird because here's this kind of movie back in the early 90s dealing with a war. And it's kind of like we're in this pandemic and we're kind of, it's its own kind of war. It's like totally modern. It's this virus. And it made me just feel so little. Like here's this big Braveheart. It's like fight. And then, I'm like, okay, our fight is I'm just going to stay home.
And wash my hands way too much.
Yeah, totally. So one reason why, because it just feels so odd to me, the hearing the sense. I mean, in the greater sense, I loved it because for me, it expressed the higher calling. You have William Wallace, who really is being threatened and have this lack of external freedom, but which leads to, right? This lack of external freedom leads to, really, I guess in my opinion, the highest internal freedom one could ever have. And that's that freedom to let go of self completely for a higher cause. I mean, there's a whole threshold of things, right? But his limiting of the outside world and the threats of some other government, whatever it may be, internally changed his disposition to the point where he was willing to go to the very end. And so I wanted to start with this because I think it resonates a little bit with what we're going through and the pandemic and all this crazy stuff. And I want to talk about freedom. So when you think of freedom, Sis, like what comes to mind in your own life? Like, what do you think of? What's the first thing that you think about when it comes to that?
Well, it's hard not to, after hearing that soundbite, sure, not think of like the United States and freedom and what it means to us as a country.
Yeah.
So I think that's like the broader, bigger thing that comes up first. Mm-hmm. But I know what we talk about a lot, and I think what's so relevant right now is this freedom to choose your response. Mm-hmm. Freedom to choose your actions, like all of these things. But that's so much right now. That's so relevant. I mean, thinking about, you know, this invisible enemy, that's what makes it so hard.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Like, it's not like, okay, we can take our guns and there's an identified,
yeah, no, totally threat,
actual thing that can be visualized, which makes it so much harder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it totally does. And so when it comes to freedom, I wanted to propose this because so for me, freedom is, honestly, my freedom is, don't get away in my calendar. That's freedom. I am so like plan oriented. Freedom means as soon as you come in my office and you're not scheduled, you've threatened the very core of who I am as a being. And so I will react that way. It's so bad. So I've been working over this. Being married helps, obviously, because that doesn't fly. And so a little spontaneity kind of helps, right? So that's my immediate thing that comes to my mind. It's kind of my own like stubbornness as well. But, you know, looking at the context of the pandemic and the coronavirus and seeing the response, especially lately, you know, we're recording this on May 18th and there's a lot of stuff going on and a lot of disputes and disagreements and a lot of this idea of taking away our freedom. And where does that come from? So I want to propose, and this will get heady for just a couple of minutes, and I'm not going to try to make it heady at all, but I want to frame this because it really does, I think, for me, it resonates deeply with me, and it actually has helped me a lot with maybe looking things more realistically in my life. But there's two primary ways in my mind. The first is like this Lockean expression of freedom from John Locke, which really I think we adopted a lot in the US. And this idea that freedom is literally, it's a liberty consists of being free from any superior power on earth. And I think we see that now. I see some people being like, no, I'm not going to wear masks. It's my choice. It's freedom. You do what you want to do. I want to do what I want to do. So that really is that kind of grounded freedom. But one thing I've always had a problem with is that it makes everything an option. It makes everything possible, which I guess objectively speaking, it sounds like a good deal. Like I get everything, but I noticed, and I don't know if you've expressed this or if you've had this, or I definitely have, that when I have tons of things that are at my disposal or a lot of different directions, I have a really tough time just even making a step forward. Like I need something, some limitation to say, here's my parameters by which I can make a choice. So that's the one. And the second one is a more of an old school style of freedom. And it's from Thomas Aquinas, who's a theologian, but I've resonated with him. And he has this like freedom as a means to human excellence, to human happiness, to the fulfillment of human destiny, and so forth. So I want to propose these two and talk about these two because I like this version, the second version, better because it has a little more narrowed framework and it actually has a direction. Whereas the old style, it's like it's freedom for freedom's sake. And my proposal in this episode is that freedom is never for freedom's sake. Freedom is for the sake of love. Like, you know, I was talking to you, sisters, a few minutes ago about how could you imagine if like I proposed you, you know, if Brian proposed to you, you know, with a gun to his head and how romantic that would be and how beautiful that would be versus like if you actually just did it freely. I mean, freedom really is an important part of love. And I think it really is, right? Freedom is for the sake of love. And then the other part, you have freedom, but then there's this one more part of the heady part. It's important to get this criteria in my mind. And that is the will. And that's what we choose just by choosing. And so my old school understanding of the will, which I like, and I want to propose it to you guys as well, as well, is that the will is like this little power that's always on. It's always scoping the terrain for the good. It's just looking for the good, right? Have you ever, sis, ever in your entire world, I'm sure you've never had in your entire life, ever rationalized anything in your head to try and make it sound good and then choose it?
Oh my gosh, all the time. Yeah, this is how we work. Right?
Yeah, totally. This is our life. I mean, it makes it feel like this is right. Right? The will is always looking for the good, whether we know that or not. We are the biggest con artists of our own selves, trying to like, hey there, me. This is really cute and sweet. You should choose it. It's really cool. And then you choose it, and you realize, oh, that was stupid. Right? So you have freedom. You have two different kinds of freedom. The big generic, the ocean is your oyster, which I think is the wrong way of saying that, but whatever it is, right? And then you have a more narrowed sense of freedom, which freedom is for the sake of love, freedom for excellence, for virtue, for something greatness. And so why am I framing this all up? I did it all for one reason. I've been interested in this idea of options. Since I was like 4 years ago, I was working closely with the University of Colorado, and I was with the dean of students, and we're having a meeting together. And she asked me, she's like, do you know what the number one workshop is in all of color, all of CU. I'm like, God, no, well, what is it? And then she said, it's decision-making workshop. That is the number one by a landslide, like workshop attended at Colorado. Here's these 18, 19, 22 year olds just having no ability to make decisions. She was telling me about how she would get calls to the, whatever the risk office or whatever, or the urgent office. I don't know what it was. Because maybe a girl got a flat tire and she was paralyzed in fear on Broadway with a flat tire, right? Dealing with the unknown becomes so scary. So I think part of this, and I want to propose this, is part of the biggest reason I feel like in my mind is that we have nothing to bite down on. We've lived a culture, lived a society, and kind of advanced this idea of, and I get the sentimentality behind it. It's great that you can do anything, sweetie. You can do everything. In the end, it doesn't really help because anything is as good as nothing.
Yes. And if you pair that with what I think is very prevalent right now, a bit of perfectionism, a bit of yeah, unrealistically high expectations, whether they're adopted for the person or they're sort of been imposed upon, mm-hmm. that it's too much. I mean, I'm thinking yeah. about having Sammy's heading off to college soon. Yeah. And the process and hearing about that process, like that people visited all kinds of campuses, I mean, in all different states and applied to so many different, you know, again, all these different options and choices that it's almost paralyzing. The process is a bit overwhelming. And that wasn't true. For example, in the day and age that I chose a college, it was much more simplified. It didn't really feel like there were too many options really far away. It wasn't as realistic. But this shows up like in so many ways. I just see it that there's too many options and this unwillingness to narrow them sometimes. I think because of finding the right or the perfect option or these high expectations that it is paralyzing for people. And you're right, that age group, like I think especially people who are like, come, like you mentioned, how to make a decision as you're becoming an adult, right? Yeah. Like,
good basic skill.
It's hard anyway. And now it's just incredibly complicated with what's available, what the options are.
That's great. And I read this once. I don't know if you heard this idea that there really is this inverse proportion to the amount of energy expenditure on a decision and the satisfaction that comes from it. Like for me, like you and I both had, I think, similar. I don't know how many colleges you apply to. I applied to one, University of Nebraska Lincoln, and I got in, right? And I had a great time, but I really didn't think about it. Our dad went there, you know, Greg, our older brother went there. It just kind of follows. So by the time I grew up, it was like, okay, you just go there. You're not even a Bodker anymore. So I must just go. So I apply, I go in, and it was a great experience. And then I see people, you know, the simple things is like spending 30 minutes working over the menu at a restaurant. And then I literally can tell you exactly the first bites, be like, it's okay. Because you spent too much time on just pick something.
this comes up very much now around meals when we're doing carry out, even currently. Like, okay, so there's three people in our home and you know, some flexibility is required, but the longer it takes to figure out where we're going to pick up our food from, you're right, the less satisfying it is. Mm-hmm. Whereas when we just make it quickly, it just, it all works so much better. And I think the food tastes better.
Sure, absolutely. You don't have to put some work into it. And I think there's a couple of books that I think of, David Brooks, from The Second Mountain. I mentioned this before. He's really an advocate of this idea that, you know, he talks about the most growing group of people in the U.S. particularly are the unaffiliated, right? This idea of always trying to keep our options open, not to bite down on anything. He talks about how he really feels like the same thing I was mentioning, like the students, young people who are going up and telling them that the sky is their limit. It's a great sentiment, but it doesn't do anything to help them actually find what they're looking for. That, you know, you need to have something to bite down upon. There needs to be something by which I think of another book, Drive, by Daniel Pink, where he talks about this idea of motivation, what motivates us and what gets us going and what helps us to probably make those decisions in our life when we feel paralyzed. And he talks about these three areas by which you can actually be motivated internally, and that is autonomy, mastery, and meaning. This idea that, okay, autonomy, we all desire to have to be able to make decisions on our own, to be left alone, to make our own decisions. And the more we're kind of looked after and kind of being checked in on, we don't feel very like ourselves, you know, and mastery, we always want to like be moving towards something and mastering something. And of course, we're all looking for meaning. So these are the three things by which intrinsically motivate us to help us actually forward in life.
You know, that autonomy is so huge for me. Yeah. Like I look at my just work career and I've always chose the most autonomous work positions, and I've quickly exited those that are not the case. Mm-hmm. And so I very much relate to this idea, and people have, I think, different, there's probably a little bit of differences along the spectrum there.
Sure.
But that piece, like that ownership, investment in it, flexibility to make it work is really, it's huge for me.
Yep. I think obviously being in the same house for a while, I don't know if it's nature or nurture, because I just now realized I'm the same way. I am so into autonomy that it kind of bites me in the butt, because I don't, my main job isn't that, but honestly, I don't, my natural tendency is not to collaborate. My natural tendency is I love to just be my own person, get my job done, and hopefully do it well. And that's my preferred place to be. And that, so when it comes to freedom, that's probably one of my highest values is autonomy, which is really good for certain places and not so good for other places. Again, I'm thinking like everybody has, or at least it needs to be expressed differently, you know, in the context of a marriage. Like autonomy is great, but it can get out of proportion, and it can be, an escape route, right? To not deal with those hard things in your life, which we'll get to in a little bit, which I think I've struggled with as well, that keeps me from being truly free. So framing this idea of freedom and what it is, and autonomy for me, and Sis, you were saying, is a particular unique part of freedom. And this idea that we need to narrow, if we really want to be free, if we want to be happy, I think it sounds counterproductive, but we've got to narrow our playing field by which we can actually entertain options. Because I really do think that the more narrow our playing field is, the happier we are. Now, I'm not that perfectionist necessarily in certain areas. I'm more like I'm satisfied with just good stuff, and I'm not constantly looking for the most perfect thing. So I know some of this is personally driven. And with you, sis, what is it like, and what do you see within the context of your counseling?
This piece of expectations, and I'm thinking particularly between like 18 to 20 some year olds, and they're developing their own values and expectations and learning about themselves so much. Yeah. But then there's so much coming at them from outside.
Yeah.
I remember an example in my own life that I think about is when my son started high school. No, I'm sorry. It was eighth grade. So in the first day of his eighth grade year, one of his teachers had on the board how many days till high school. And so, and then she would count that down every day. I didn't know this till I went to like the curriculum night or whatever. And the messaging, a lot of it was, hey, this, you got to do this and do it well, because this isn't going to fly in high school. Mm. And then on top of it, there's this like ticking counter that you see. every day. Uh-huh. And so there's this constant messaging, I think, of pushing forward. Mm. You are not going to be prepared for the next thing. You are not going to be prepared for the next thing. And it focuses us, you know, I always told our son, like, when you get to high school, you're going to have high school level skills. Mm. And if there's a deficit, we'll deal with it then.
Yeah.
Like, rather than putting all this pressure, but like, how do you just, amidst that messaging, which I think is pretty common, how do you just go, well, do I like literature classes? Do I want to take those? Yeah. You know, if there's an option, yeah, in the future in college, like we get caught in that. I see so many people get caught in that. And I think it's a combination of adopting these external messages and voices, and but we get caught in it. And then, so where do you explore the part that's helpful for making choices, yeah, which is what, you know, gives meaning to my life, yeah, you know, what fits for me, what inspires me, what do I feel good doing? Mm-hmm. And so I think when you can make that shift away from like identify, oh, wait, these external messages were not helpful,
yeah,
and I need to turn sort of inward, yeah, and sort of, and look to myself as a guide, then that's that sort of top layer work that I think can make a shift very quickly.
That's awesome. I mean, and that kind of gets to the core of this idea of that, for me, the most important thing is internal freedom. I mean, without internal freedom, right? If you have addiction, these kind of, that very little external freedom is really going to benefit you to the fullest capacity. Internal is kind of the core place to look at. I'm thinking of, you know, how many, you think you hit the nail on the head, sis, with this idea that so many students I see are trying to find their values, know who they are, in a context where they're never having space to digest their own material of their own life. And so they don't really have that genuine freedom, because what happens is, A, they're bombarded nonstop by their podcasts, their music, whatever it is. So they're distracted. They don't know themselves. They have no, so then they don't have the sense of values that are formulated, that maybe they express it, right? They'll react to people with their values, but they can't articulate it in their minds correctly of like what it is that actually they value. And so they don't have this like scaffolding to deal with decisions in the sense of like, oh, this is what I value, so I should choose this. I should choose this or that. They don't have that kind of framework because they've been constantly experiencing maybe their values like reactively, but not even actually in the space to be able to, or the margin, which I call, to have that space to be able to maybe get to know themselves so that they can come with actually content with options in their life to make good decisions that they can be proud of. I'm thinking, you know, on top of that also, and then you have the pressure of having to plan everything you just said. I remember like, it was like a, oh gosh, 20 years ago, I was talking to a mentor of mine and he told me, you need to start getting up at 5 a.m. every morning, starting now. I'm like, why? He's like, you need to prepare to have kids. I'm like, I'm like 22, 23. He's like, you need to start preparing now so you're ready when you have them. And I'm like, intuitively, I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like, no, I'm going to sleep until like 9 and 10. I mean, this is like, that's just what I do. I'm 23 years old. And so then I remember, and like, this is crazy because guess what, guys and gals, that when you have kids, you really adapt quickly to getting up at 2 a.m. You don't need practice, right? There's some things by which you don't have to plan the whole thing out, where there is an element of discovery and adaptation that the body can do that allows us for some spontaneity so we can truly be free, right? Free to actually engage life and not plan everything. And trust me, this is something that I need to tell myself all the time. Like, I'm saying this, but I don't practice it as much, you know?
And I don't think it's useful. In fact, I think it creates a lot of additional stress and anxiety to constantly be in the future like mm-hmm. that. Like when you're in eighth grade, be in eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And when you're single and childless at the moment, then yeah. sleep yeah. in. I mean,
get your rest now.
This idea, because under it is this idea that I'm not, it's like a lack of trust in yourself, I think. Yeah. Like I won't be able to do it when the time comes. Mm-hmm. And I just think we grow and feel a lot better in the process mm-hmm. when you learn to trust that, okay, I'll cross that bridge when I come to it, and I'll do what's needed to acquire any additional skills I need versus like always operating in this deficit almost like, oh, I'm not enough, so I better start way early.
Totally. Kind of thing. That's totally it. I love lean manufacturing and like this idea of minimum viable product, and it sounds all fancy and schmancy, but it really has impacted my life personally because I like the principles. It's the idea that there's a lot of waste that we enter into our life, and our ability to predict the future is kind of bad. Like, it just really is bad. We get it wrong a lot. And so we put all this investment preparing for something, and then maybe 90% of the time it doesn't even happen at all, or it doesn't happen in a way that's even kind of familiar to what we're planning for. There's all this waste. And again, we're kind of stripping ourselves of this freedom by busying ourselves of all these things that could be and that oftentimes don't happen. And we're not actually then to be in touch with ourselves. I mean, I can feel this, like especially when the pandemic happened, that was a really acute manifestation of that for me, because as soon as it happened, we were nonstop planning for the worst possible scenario nonstop. And we weren't having any time to be a family, right? We're letting go of the most important things to plan for the worst. And when in the end, probably 75% of the stuff that we planned for, we didn't need. And you know, that freedom went out the window. So I totally get that.
And I want to add to, you know, that example you gave, and, you know, I don't know the background, but there's also the ability to go, do I even want kids?
Yeah.
Right? The freedom to go to question these sort of norms and expectations that are very individual and personal decisions, but often people who, under the guise of being helpful, make assumptions.
Yeah.
And so part of it is freedom to go, do I even want that, right? Like there's a question earlier than that. And so that freedom to choose a different path.
Yep. And it reminds me of, I think it was maybe Barry Schwartz, we're going to talk about now, the paradox of choice, but he gave it was decisive book. I think it was a decisive book. I'll put in the show notes as well, where this idea that we oftentimes fall prey to either or decisions. So either I need to do this or do that, but typically, it's not an either or. It's much bigger than that. And again, this is like a too limiting, right? We're on two fronts. We get bombarded. It's the too many options, and so we feel a lack of freedom. And then it's either or, and we restrict ourselves to maybe other options. Maybe it could be both and. You don't know. It could be something else. You until you at least entertain the idea that it's not just one way or another, and allow that facilitation to be a part of your own process.
And the freedom to delay a decision or to go, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes people are caught in too much, trying to decide too much and planning maybe too far ahead. And it's just maybe time to kind of take it step back and go, I'm just going to table that. Like it's okay to not know at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Just and to be comfortable with the uncertainty. If there's one thing we're getting trained on right now, it's uncertainty, and to be able to somehow be okay with it. Knowing how long this, whatever it is that's going on in our life, the pandemic is going to end.
And it's okay to not have the right answer. Like we were talking about college students, and it strikes me, you know, as they cope with decisions, part of that chunk of time is about learning, getting to know yourself, right? You're going to make mistakes and you're going to learn from the decisions that you regret as well. And so it's not to stay out of that trap. Like there is a right decision and that's the one to be made, but to give the freedom to, it's okay to not know. It's okay to just make a decision going, I'm going to just check out if I like this or if this works for me.
It reminds me of like Thomas Edison, the famous quote, you know, it's true, but something about how he had 10,000 failures before he actually had the first success. Right. So this pressure to like get it right the first time, I think part of this comes, this is why we, another level of internal freedom that I don't think that I really wrestle with is that social media has made everything look as if it's the first time it's out of the park. It is out of the park the first hit. Like I see these people and they're all happy and they're perfectly suited and they look gorgeous and they just got it made from the get-go. And so then there's this pressure of like, oh crap, I have to be ready. And so then I go back into plan mode, like you mentioned, like I can't be spontaneous because if I'm spontaneous, there is a chance I'm going to fail and I'm not going to be like the rest of the world who succeeds on their first round, right? They go viral on their first YouTube video and have 10 million followers, right? And it gets in our mind and we have all these terrible constructs that prevent us from actually feeling like we can truly be free to do something and be okay with it and then fail and know that that's how the world works normally in a real world.
Right, exactly. And this piece that I think is when you're on social media and you maybe you've had this experience, you'll see somebody doing something and suddenly you think you should be doing
totally.
That, right?
Yeah.
And and you can just get sucked into that abyss quite easily. Uh-huh. And again, you're not pausing and checking in with, well, do I even want to hike? Do I like hiking? I mean, those are beautiful pictures and it looks like a fabulous day. But sometimes you also are only getting a glimpse. And sometimes it's helpful to go, well, you know, maybe someone had bad allergies and broke their ankle or, well, not broke their ankle or tripped. But like, it's not just, there's so much more to it than this tiny little snapshot that looks perfect. And then we think we want that. And it just pulls people into, again, not knowing themselves, but like grasping at things outside of themselves. Oh my gosh,
it totally reminds me of when I first got to Colorado, and you're in Colorado, so you've got a snowboard or skis. So I did it. And I always put on the face of, man, this was awesome. Honestly, I really didn't like it. I didn't tell anybody. My favorite part was going to like the cafe and having a beer and just sitting. Like, and halfway in, I'm like, I'll just stay here. You go do a couple runs. I'm going to take a beer. Right. That was the most exciting part.
Yes. For me, like it's this hiking is big in California. And I finally, I don't know when at some point I just admitted to someone, I was like, you know, I just like a well-paved trail. I am not going on the tiny one person up the mountain trails. It looks great. I love that people love it. It's not for me. I want this nice, broad, wide, clear trail. There's a path in, there's a path out, or it's ideally a circle, right? So there's not a lot of thinking involved.
I know exactly where I'll be once I end.
And so it's like, you know, acknowledging what's true for you while being happy for others who, you know, do it differently and not getting caught.
That is, yes, exactly it. And this is why we're going with this one, because we'll land it this way, that I think the biggest opportunity right now, and this is why I want to have episode 2 being about internal and external freedom, we're feeling the weight and the restriction of external freedom, not being able to go out. Even though we're opening our doors again, we're still afraid. We're not quite going out and being the normal way. Even if we do go to the restaurant, it's still going to be a little more nerve-wracking. It's not going to be totally normal. And just really use this opportunity to ground yourself in finding a deeper sense of internal freedom. I know I had a good friend, you know, a couple weeks ago say that he's learned more about himself for better and for worse in the context of being alone for about 8 weeks. And that's the ideal. And we were just talking about this idea of that the best thing one could do is, what do you value? I mean, it's the same thing of feeling pressure of going on the hike up a mountain versus, I don't value that. I value the circle on concrete, right? And so that's what I value. I got to start being in tune to myself. You know, it was from the Digital Minimalism, Cal Newport book, where he really talks about where I kind of used his own words, but really kind of spending some time to date yourself. It's getting that space to like, how do I think about this? Actually be in your own mind and allow yourself to have a conversation with yourself and maybe get to know yourself, you know, a little bit so that you can actually then have that freedom to be able to engage decisions and bring yourself to the table, not somebody else.
And to direct your, it's a choice to direct your attention there, right? It's easy to focus on what we can't do. And when you do that, you're going to feel increasingly frustrated, angry. It may affect the choices you make. Maybe you'll be a little more risk-taking, who knows? And acknowledging like, I miss those things. And it's really hard not to be able to do them. That, yeah, there's some sense of loss there, but then moving into, okay, what can I learn about myself? Yeah. And, you know, it's, if you're willing to go there, there's a lot to learn. I wish I had written it down. I saw some meme or something about, recently, like evolve. So people like don't know you when you head back to work.
That's awesome.
Like evolve that much.
That's great. The use this opportunity to really have growth, right? I know it's changed me a lot. I still have a lot of work to do, but this idea of just, allowing yourself to look more deeply to say, I'm stuck, I'm afraid, and allowing that not to be stuck with, I'm afraid. Use that as opportunity to say, I'm afraid. What does that mean I value? Because behind everything, every anxiety, every disorder, every whatever it is that makes you feel kind of weighted down, there's a truth about something you value and love and appreciate. And sometimes we get so fixated on this anxiety or this depression or this anger or this sadness that we don't kind of get that next step lower and say, I'm sad because of I feel this way, right? About the situation.
And to look at what gives you like joy or happiness. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, so I have a couple recent examples of recognizing things that maybe if you had asked me, would you miss this? I don't know that I would have thought too much about it, but I hadn't been in Trader Joe's in quite a while because we were getting groceries delivered earlier and you can't get them delivered from Trader Joe's. So I was in there this weekend and I seriously had just total pure happiness. I was in the frozen foods aisle and I saw my crackers that I love. Awesome. That I had not had in like 10 weeks or so. And I just, luckily, you know, I just you have to tune into those experiences, right? Yes. And like, I was so happy. Who would have thought that you'd like, that would be one of the joys of my weekend, awesome. Is spotting my favorite crackers in Trader Joe's.
See, this, go ahead.
Oh, and I have one more that I work out at the gym and I walk, but the gym's closed for I don't know how long. And I realized because I walk with my husband, Brian, most of the time. So we're chatting or sometimes we'll listen to a podcast or something. But when I'm at the gym, I listen to my music. Well, yesterday I decided to get on the treadmill and listen to music because I just thought I needed to do that. And it was like amazing. Like I didn't realize how much I'd missed listening to music. So like there's these simple joys and also these like cues of what really gives me not just bumps in happiness, like what adds pleasure to my day.
That's awesome. I mean, okay. So there were a few things and then we'll close up. First of all, sis, it could have gone two different ways with Trader Joe's, right? You could have, this is what it's all about mindset. You could have gone there and did what you did, right? Oh my gosh, my crackers. Or it could have been like, oh my gosh, my crackers. I can't believe it's been this long since I've actually had crackers. This is ridiculous, right? Why did I have to be home? So you can see how quickly it goes down two different directions by just your mindset. And I think a couple of stories for me, like just the other day, I had to sell something and you know, we don't want to have strangers come here. So, but we really need to sell this thing. And so like, you know what? I'll meet them at a Safeway parking lot. I'll wear a mask. Well, we'll keep 6 feet away. We made it. So my first time driving by myself and I felt so like free as a bird. Like this felt great. I drive into the parking lot. It was all sunny. It was wonderful. I didn't want to come back home. I felt bad for saying this. I just want to keep going. Like I just want to keep driving. And these are the great things that like these small things are so much more elevated now. And it's something to be thankful for that normally I probably wouldn't feel that way. I'd feel like, oh, I have to sell this thing. But I had the opportunity to have a genuine sense of freedom in enjoying a moment of selling something and being outside in the real world. Another really weird one. It's like a small joy, but it's weird. So my kids, every once in a while, watch Blippi. If you don't know what it is, it's some guy who plays with toys and goes outside and does things. It's crazy, right? But the boys love Blippi. And all of a sudden, I've been drawn into Blippi lately. And the reason why is because he's a real dude versus like a cartoon. And he's outside. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, he's in a lake. That's so cool. And so I'm watching him and have this greater appreciation and love it because I haven't been outside for such a long time. But these are the things that if you stay attuned to these things, you start having some really simple new joys come in your life probably because you've been starved of certain things, right? And maybe this is why intermittent fasting is so great. I just now thought of that, right? So
maybe, yeah. Then it really is amazing.
It really is. Food tastes that much better when you don't eat it. So
yeah. Yes.
So.
Yeah. There's the opportunity in that, right? The freedom to go to tune into what creates satisfaction, pleasure, happiness, joy, because it really is an easy time to get sucked into the anger, sadness, fear, loss.
Yep. And this is why I love Thomas Aquinas' idea of freedom, because it really is just its idea of freedom for the sake of the good. And there's small little goods. It's the Blippi. It's the going to sell the camera, which normally I wouldn't stand, or getting your favorite crackers, this new sense of an enjoyment of freedom, right? Internally, right? It really is an internal freedom because those crackers would have been there 2 months ago before the lockdown and now. So it has nothing to do with circumstances in the sense of it's the idea of this allowed you to have an internal sense of freedom. Like, I really enjoy these. I like these. So I'm going to end with this. My One thing I do with some of my students, I teach them to do a mission statement. And I think it's fun because mission statements sometimes feel cheesy. But for me, this one was really important for me when I first learned this method. I want to share with you because it really does, I feel it elevates a sense of freedom and makes it a mission. So how do you create your own personal mission statement in the way I think you should do it? Oftentimes, first of all, I think it comes from a buried wound or a difficulty in your own life. I really feel like that's where you kind of find your own mission statement. And I'll explain, I'll give you my mission statement to close this out. And then I encourage you guys who are listening to spend the next week or two trying to create a mission statement in this difficult time that elevates your sense of internal freedom and really looking and changing the question of things. So when you feel burdened or bombarded by something, you change your question to, instead of why does this always happen to me, to know where is the gift in this so that you don't lose that internal freedom. Because when we go down that road, we become a slave, right? To ourselves. We're just like, this always happens to me. And it's not good. So oftentimes this mission for you comes in a particular wound. And it's the opposite of that wound. So now it's weird talking like this with sis, because we came in the same childhood. And usually when I teach this, there's nobody who came up in my house. But for me, I feel like one of my greatest wounds is that in our house, there was never really any fighting going on. There was just always this kind of leave it to beaver family growing up. Everything was kind of, quote, perfect. And there wasn't really much. I didn't witness it. I mean, we were different in ages. I'm much younger than Angela. I had a different kind of childhood. So it may have been different in yours, but I didn't witness it, right? Almost never. And so I think that kind of inculcated and bought into me this sense of like people pleasing, that like, as long as you get along, you're accepted. As long as we don't express our opinions that disagree with someone, then you're loved. Like it was never overtly taught, never. But I felt like it was kind of like somehow subconsciously put into my system, to when I first recognized I went to college, I became like a people pleasing addict. I never wanted to I was always the most accommodating person, whatever, do whatever you want. Even when I had things that I'd rather not do, I feel like you just don't do it. And so what this kind of, I think, got into me is the idea that I couldn't be truly transparent. I couldn't be honest about my feelings because feelings weren't something that we could do safely. I was never taught how to do that growing up, how to like express my feelings in a way that that disagreed and then still have love at the end. I never witnessed it. So I didn't know how to do it. And so then for me, my mission statement, I did this about 10 years ago, became the opposite. I'll read this to you. This is kind of my mission statement that I think I'm good in certain situations and I'm really terrible still in other situations. It's very situational. So I say I create a world of radical authenticity and transparency so that I may offer a glimpse of unconditional love to others so that they feel loved and honored in their strengths and weaknesses, right? That they feel like they can be truly, completely just the ideal thing for me is that people can feel so free in my office that they can say anything they want, as dark and as gloomy and as disgusting or whatever it is that happened. And they still feel like embraced. Like that's the ideal for me. That's my mission. So that's what I want to do for you guys. Like, I mean, have you any thoughts on that, sis?
Yeah. It's so beautiful. Like, I guess listening to you, because we almost do some of the same work as I'm listening to you, because that's what the therapy office is. Mm. It's where people say things they haven't been able to voice before and it's accepted. It's allowed. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't change how I think about you or view you. And so it's beautiful to hear. Those spaces we need more of them. I think very much. I think they're healing spaces. But the anger piece is interesting. I think I had early on in my training, I had a supervisor notice, because that was back, you had to tape your sessions and go through them with the supervisor, and noticed my discomfort with anger, an angry client. I didn't notice this because this was a blind spot for me. And he was so great. He just asked, well, who are your role models for anger? And I was like, I don't have any. I don't know. I never saw anyone get angry. And you know, I imagine our parents thought they were being protective of us, right? Yeah. Like whatever issues we have, we're not going to show those in front of the kids. And yeah, like I get that thinking, but I didn't know how to be with anger. It's still actually very hard for me. It like shuts me down. Yep. Like I get this like response, I get very overwhelmed and I can't think straight. And so learning to like, that's been a challenge for me, how to allow that. How does it look? You know, we're all get angry. It's reasonable to be angry at times and express things as a result of that. But it's it's something that doesn't come naturally to me at all.
Yeah. And neither does it for me. And the closer the relationships are to me, the harder it is, of course, which I think is common sense because it's more vulnerable. It's one thing to do it with a stranger, to be more patient. But then as the closers become closer and closer and closer, the harder work it is to actually live this out and create that really profound, loving, open space, which I think you agree we can land on that. We need more open spaces so badly, especially now where, I mean, there's so many people I meet with, I feel like I'm being strangled. Like, I mean, they're not doing anything, but it's feeling this weight of being not accepted by what I'm saying. Right. And we need this more. We need an opportunity. We need that opportunity for freedom, as well as we need to have the internal freedom to be able to express ourselves and know what we value.
Maybe Matt, as we land the plane, as you say, I think it's useful to think about how some of the stuff we talked about can be beneficial to people. And one of the big things that was present was to hear how limiting, in my words, this is, and limiting some of your choices, there are huge benefits to.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to end. And I love the idea of the why, because in the end, that's what sells the most. Like, why and how is this so important? Okay, why is this important? Number one, in my own life, I've witnessed this idea that by limiting your choices, right, limiting your options, you're actually truly much happier, less anxiety. The more you ruminate, right, the more options you have, the more you ruminate about things, the more time you spend on things, the more, then I've seen it over and over again, the less value you get in something when you end up choosing the thing you do, because you spend so much time. So there's a greater sense of happiness. There's a freedom. There's a deep freedom when you actually live a more simple life. It's kind of like the movement lately of the past couple of years of like essentialism and minimalism, right? There's a joy of living a life that's simpler. And so we've really been going crazy with attributing it to things, right? Be more minimalist in your house. Buy less stuff. That's actually a really good thing. I mean, if I look around where I'm at right now, you don't want to know where I'm at. I'm in my dungeon of a basement with boxes everywhere. And all these boxes don't make me feel calm. It just reminds me of another to-do action. Somewhere lingering and needs to be cleaned or gutted. But as you begin to get this stuff away and have a clear house, you feel calm. You feel in control. You feel relaxed. You feel more hopeful. You feel more like you can actually dream again, versus actually having to deal with it in front of you. Now that's the physical world. Now when you deal with the internal world and you start dealing with this idea of all of the options and all the things available, it's the same thing. Much of it is simply clutter. It's another to-do item to either worry about, obsess about, plan about. And we find ourselves never enjoying the moment and always planning the next thing or worrying about something or being stuck. And then what happens is you end up delaying a decision because you're constantly stuck. And then you have the compound effect of more and more decisions, because guess what? Life comes at you at decisions whenever it wants to come at. So then you have now 5 decisions, 10 decisions, and now you have 15 decisions. They're compounding, and now you're more anxious, you're more stuck. And now there's actually maybe consequences in some of your decisions because they're being delayed. And so now you have consequences on top of this. So all of this really creates an unfulfilling and non-real life. So I encourage you, it's so important, and the why is you are much happier by living more simply, reducing your options, right? How do you do this as a person? Understand what you value. What are your standards? What do you love? And I get it. I'm not advancing narcissism. Just follow your passions and don't just ignore everyone else. I do believe, I'll end on this. I could talk all day on this, but like, I'm really convinced that like, you want to get rid of the waste that is ineffective and non-meaningful. So the anxiety, all the other options, and you want to reallocate that waste to something important and profound and beautiful. So what do I mean by that? I mean, simply get rid of the anxiety, get rid of all these options to prevent you from actually being present, and then reallocate a waste that maybe is you don't desire something, but there's someone you love who likes to do something. You do it with them because you love them, right? That's a waste in the sense of you don't value it, right? But that friend or that spouse values it. So you do it enthusiastically with them. And if you can't get rid of all the other things in your head, it's hard to actually see what they value. First and foremost, you're stuck in your own world. And then once you actually have that space, you actually have the energy to be able to engage someone else in something you may not actually be passionate about, but you're passionate about them. And so you can allocate to them. That's my why. Well, I think that wraps this up for this episode. The biggest thing I want to convey to you is basically, yes, there's external, there's internal freedom, but the thing we are in control of is the internal freedom ourselves. And that's the best way we can have. Once we start pigeonholing, trying to compromise or change somebody else's freedom, somebody else's reality, it only causes more problems. So I encourage you now, dig deep, use this opportunity in the most difficult circumstances. Where is a gift? Because the more times we react in a negative way, we become less and less free. Find what you value, embrace what you value, and check out that mission statement. Make it help be a part of your life to grow and be a gift to another person. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of Living the Real. If you want to check out more information, go to livingthereal.com and sign up for my newsletter. If you want to support this podcast, you can do that at patreon.com/LTR, as well as one-time payments at Venmo and PayPal in the show notes. See you all next episode. Take care. Bye-bye. Before you head off, I just have one small favor to ask of you. If there's anybody in your life you can think of, two people that might really could use this Living the Real podcast, would you share it with them this week? I'd greatly appreciate it. Somebody in your life, like, man, they could just use a deeper perspective, right? Maybe a calling to a bigger purpose, or maybe they just need a better plan in their life. Share with them. Give them the hope that they need to be able to get out of whatever they need to get into, to be inspired to do something great. So if you can think of two people in your life right now who could use a little bit more of a realness in their week, please share it with them. Take care. Bye-bye.